I believe Greg can control what's actually being displayed so that it doesn't keep bouncing between screen to screen.
Well, that's no fun. I'll just leave it on me the whole time then. I'll lose it. All right, so we are actually live, and so this is the Brothers Wisps Go to Wispa. That's kind of a mouthful. 2014, so you guys are out in Vegas. We got Justin and Mike out there. We've got J.J. Boyd.
Hello.
And Justin Miller. He's looking thin. I think he's lost weight. Look at that. Yeah, looking great. I can barely see you.
I'm not sure where he went. He was running around. I think he's trying to plug his laptop in, perhaps.
There he is. He's back. Of course, nobody cares. All right, guys. So, how was the trip out there to Wispa? How was the plane ride? Or did you guys drive?
Oh no, it's like 30 hours to get here. About as long as the drive to you, I think.
Oh, forget that. So how was the flight out there?
Mine was fairly uneventful, other than having to wake up at 4:30. Got here roughly on time.
I got in Monday night about 9 o'clock after being on a 3-hour plane ride with a little boy named Jacob. He was mom for 3 hours. Don't do that, Jacob. Don't do that, Jacob.
I've seen on your Facebook where you posted no screaming children now that I'm off the plane or something along those lines. So.
Yeah, there were three of them. Their hearts.
Spoken like a true person without children.
It looks like Tom perhaps is trying to get in with the program.
Yeah, Tom was asking on Skype about how to get in, and then Tom Smith came.
I'll work on him. I'll get him in here. But for now, tell us. So what day is this of Wispa?
This is
Wednesday, the second actual day of the conference.
Yeah, Wispa shows they. Tonight's the banquet. Tomorrow's kind of a wrap up day. Yesterday was like the first main show day, but there's been people here for at least a week already. Because over the weekend they have what they call Fiber Weekend, and that's just exploding. Last year there was 100 people. This year there's 200 people. There's people deploying fiber networks and fiber vendors showing up, showing everybody the complete gamut of how to do fiber to the whatever, from legal aspects, technical aspects, physical aspects, the whole show. And it's just something that I always want to do, but. And don't.
We also have some microtech training, tower safety training. There's a lot of training that goes on before and a little bit after.
Yeah, I'm surprised if there's another week of training classes after.
I believe Greg can control what's actually being displayed.
How is this just now circling back in?
It got lost on the internet.
I wonder if maybe somebody's trying to watch it at the same time that they're on the cast.
Kind of weird.
I'm going to close some browser tabs just so that there's no opportunity of that being our problem.
All right, so you hit the fiber stuff, so I'm guessing it's fiber to the home, fiber to the business. Talked about greenfield, brownfield, all that good stuff. Did you pick up anything that you think you're going to be able to use?
Oh, I didn't go to that part. I that started like Friday or Saturday. I got here Monday. There's just too much going on.
What good are you then, Mike?
I guess that depends. Since I got here Monday, there's been probably the week leading up to it, there's been a ton of announcements by companies, a ton of great stuff coming out. I'm looking at, there's 80 some odd vendors here this year. It's the biggest year they've had. Vendors, biggest year attendees, 1,100 attendees, 85 vendors.
85 vendors.
And next year they're moving because this hotel can't handle it anymore.
I'm always curious with the Wispa shows how many people are like without internet because the guys that can fix it are there instead of.
Sitting on the floor with their laptops, frantically typing.
Oh, yeah, I always see that, these guys. I know what's going on. As soon as you see a guy walk off in the corner and reach down the bag and pull his laptop out.
Yep.
You know.
Yep. Yeah, there's a pretty good amount of varied vendors. I mean, I would say probably the biggest thing that's struck me so far is the amount of innovation in tennis. RF Elements is here with a pretty cool... Mike can probably explain it a little better. It's almost like a circular type of wave, very little cycle.
I believe what I saw on the AFMUG list is they call it a corrugated horn. It looks just like we have increasingly larger and larger circles.
It looks like one of those camping cups that you would take that just kind of expands into a bigger cup.
Yeah, it, and it's like a perfect beam that comes out of it. There's, you know, on their spec sheets, there's literally no side lobes. I mean, at least not that they've, you know, there may be some in the, you know, the tiny little grid lines on the page, but no side lobes. They're calling them sectors, but I would not.
Because they got, what, like 30... all the way up to 90 degree.
Yeah, because the beam width is symmetrical. A 30 degree is 30 degrees azimuth and elevation.
Who's making these things again?
RF Elements.
Oh, RF Elements, okay.
And they've introduced a radio as well, which is just a rebadged Microtech. I suspect that's why Thomas went over there. RF Elements needed a guy that... the new Microtech to support this new platform.
Right. So this was a secret project that he was working on that he couldn't talk about.
Yeah. Now it's live.
They have a enclosure on the back that is waveguided to the antenna, so it just not really screws on, but it, you know, it twists into the antenna, and there's no pigtail, you know, between the enclosure and the antenna. You know, obviously there's probably a pigtail. Maybe between the card and, you know, the waveguide, but it's, you know, it just fits in there all nice and neat.
Yeah, I think you're probably cutting out what, like five to 8 inches of waveguide, I guess.
Probably, yeah. I mean, you're not doing the, you know, the pigtails and stuff like that, and we even have a one that the rocket.
It's the same premise as their radio, other than having an integrated radio. You just click the rocket in. It has the SMA type connectors in the right locations, but you don't have to screw them on. They just click in, and if there's no sort of pressure, it just holds the rocket there. Really, it's snap the rocket in, twist it on the antenna, done. There's no coax to seal, nothing external. Very convenient setup.
Is there like a conductor that attaches the SMA, or is it literally the SMA is the actual radiator?
I'm assuming that there's some sort of conductor to waveguide adapter built into that adapter. You know, I obviously couldn't cut it open to see what was inside, but I saw little brass type fittings in there. I think I was looking at like an engineering sample more than a production item. But it
it looks pretty impressive, in fairness.
Yeah, it's like, you know, they're calling it a sector, and but it's really not, because they're like they're 90 degrees sector.
There you go, that's it.
Great job. Their 90 degree sector, they're calling it, is only like 11 or 13 dBi or something like that, because it's 90 high, 90 wide. So therefore, you're not going to have a lot of gain. You're not going to be using it in an area where you're wanting to go far distances. I'm looking at for like a dense urban or suburban deployment, because your radiation pattern starts so much closer to the tower and diminishes at a certain distance. Probably great for picking up things within, you know, 2 miles of your tower.
Does it look like the radio enclosure is, or the AP enclosure, does it look like it's shielded?
I don't know. add that to the list of. It's by the way, for those of you watching live on your YouTube, you should be able to log into Google Plus and then submit us questions. We can answer them on the air at some point. If we don't answer while we're doing it before the end of the of the Whisper Show, is that we can go back to the vendors.
Yeah, we're gonna try to go to them tomorrow and say, hey, we got a we got a list of questions.
But so we'll ask them about the fueling aspect.
So the models you saw, were they plastic or were they magnesium, or have you seen them yet? Or
They had all of the items there. I mean, I didn't touch them and stuff. I just looked at it and said, looks nice. actually, I think it was fairly light. But I don't know. Yeah, that's a list of things asked about. And then because they have no side lobes, you can put 30 degrees all the way across your arc and just push a tremendous amount of bandwidth over that that area.
And there's a there are several other manufacturers here that are doing some some antenna design stuff. Who else is here? Well, of course, Brink Networks with their
while there's been a lot of antenna advancements, there's a ton of radio technology being displayed at the show.
Mimosa's here. They had an event. They're going to, for probably the most talked about company, I would say I've heard people talk about Mimosa the most. I think part of that's due to their their marketing.
We didn't go to the event last night because I assumed that they were just going to be telling people what they sent in an email last week, which is entirely not the case. They announced their multi-point platform and provided information on that. First version is going to be a 4x4 MIMO, a multi-user MIMO, so therefore it'll have a gig, like 1.2 gig roughly peak IP throughput, and it will serve two customers simultaneously. Therefore, any one customer can't get more than, 600 whatever. Which is
what sort of channel width?
20, 40, or 80. You can use, obviously the big 1.2 gig is over 80. So therefore, if you want 40 meg channel, it's only 600 something and 300 something for a 20.
Okay.
They've got a 90-degree sector and two omnis. I believe a 14 dB gain on one and 18 dB on the other omni. And the omnis aren't really just a dumb stick. It's actually like four
elements inside there.
Yeah, it's four 90s in one enclosure, and it can talk independently. In the 90, it also is four antenna elements to do some amount of beam forming. It's not their pie in the sky, which will come once Quantenna releases the Wave 2 chips. Those will have 8x8, and we'll actually be able to do, in addition to beam forming, it'll do null forming as well on the next version. So that way, it can form the beams to maximize signals with the client, as well as move the nulls so you don't actually hear interferers. They have a tight schedule. They've got so much stuff that they've been working with Quantenna on. Most of the stuff that they've been working with, they go to Quantenna and say, we need the chip to do this. And they say, no, we can't do that. Or they say, yes, we can do that. Let's know when it's ready. And it's a Like, that's a, you know, the Wave 2 stuff. No one thought before they asked him about the receive forming, you know, for the, and so then that, they had to make a chip modification to be able to do that because they didn't ever anticipate someone wanting to do that. And so now it's only the beam forming on the transmit, and the receive is still widespread. But for most of our applications, it's, you know, they're downloading, they're not uploading. So that GPS sync, it actually has GPS, I believe, in all of the radios, so you can know what your signal is supposed to be across a given link, because it knows site A, site B.
GPS sync is supposed to be hot. You know, Cambium on it. Now, Bitlinax getting into your sync. Those folks are getting into the SMU.
Approximate GPS sync will sync with the Cambium PMP series, the original Canopy line. A Cambium, you know, Canopy series, deploy the system without self-interference. And it's really come down to price. That was really expensive, but no one ever bought it. But they've got a new CEO, and CPEs are $250. APs are, they said, between $2,000 and $5,000. Obviously, that's outside of our realm. But
if you're buying Cambium 450s, it's, you know, it's like in the same ballpark.
Yeah, you know, it's a new PMP 450 pricing model with 50% more throughput, and a diverse vendor. You know, they can't actually talk to the Cambium radios. It's just timing such so that it doesn't interfere. Trango came back to the multi-point market. They left a long time ago, pissed a lot of people off. And when I went and talked to them, I was not impressed with the offering. It's AC, just plain vanilla AC. There's no sync. It's like a $430 radio that does AP, CP, whatever you want it to do. So obviously it's not going to be a residential install. They have an integrated antenna version at 21 dB and a connectorized version.
So it's just an AC point-to-point is what you're saying?
I mean, being AC, it will still do multi-point. It's just, you know, we're not going to be deploying them on houses.
Yeah.
You know, it could aggregate, small sites together. It could be more for the business market. And they actually have, them and Mimosa both have built-in 2.4 AP in all of their radios. So you can use it for access, you can use it for management. It's just, you know, I assume the cost there without all the fancy technology is minimally just, you know, here, have it. But the Trango stuff was disappointing.
Well, were you expecting something bigger out of them?
It's not going to work for residential. $400 CPE that doesn't do anything special is not going to fly.
With them being gone so long, you know, for them to really, you know, make a difference, like Mike says, their 900 megahertz product was deployed quite a bit. It was a good product for its time. And they just kind of, you know, abandoned that product. So now for them to come back to the WISP market, they needed, you know, hey, come back to us because we have this, not, you know, hey, we got something.
Gotcha. So what would you compare it to on somebody else's plate? So I know the Microtiks have the embedded AC devices that are actually out in the wild now. But they're not what, 23 dB like those guys are. They're going to be a much lower gain. And price-wise, they're going to be, I think those guys are shipping for about $109, so you could buy four of those for the price of a single one of those Tarangos.
Yet, yeah, I'm not sure who their target customer is, because it's not going to be a residential WISP.
Gotcha. And they're not, and it doesn't appear as if they're doing any kind of special voodoo. There's no special sauce in there that would make their APs any better than anybody else's, right?
You're right. I mean, it almost looks like there's a reference design in the, okay, let's just sell that. They didn't make it better. The most of the stuff, they've got a 20 or 21 dB DPE, and they'll have a connectorized CPE. Well, they have. It's not going to be shipping until probably summer, fall next year on their multi-point. So it's a ways out yet. But they got a 20 or 21 dB and a connectorized. Both one retails for $99, the other is $119. So definitely good residential CPE cost territory. 23 new messages. Holy crap, people are chatting a lot. Hopefully someone else is taking care of that. The APs, you know, I said that you have the two Omnis in the sector. They range from $950 to $1050. Pricier than what we're used to for most things, but at a significant feature improvement. I mean, we don't have anything that's going to be pushing 600 megs to each to two simultaneous clients. And they've got a Broadcom network processor in there, so as time goes on, they'll be doing their own Coursera-type data management, layer 2, layer 3, or layer 3, layer 4 type stuff. Stuff you can probably do on MicroTik. But much more simplified and good signatures to work with. That's what makes a difference. In MicroTik, you got to build it from scratch, knowing everything. Hopefully these guys a good signature stream available.
Cool.
Yeah, it'll be pretty interesting. I mean, a lot of them have, you know, here's our design, kind of proven it, it's coming, so we're trying to build interest.
Yeah, they did tell me also about an 8x8, it's 4x4, but it's just using two 2x2 channels to make the 4x4. And the 8x8, it's just going to be four 2x2 channels, because backhaul situation, you can't get the diversity you would need.
Did you check out the ET Industries folks with the sector with the?
I did.
I don't know how many inputs it had.
They do have varying products. Anywhere from 10 megahertz to like 65 gigahertz or something like that, they'll make stuff for. But what it is at the 5 gig stuff, there's a panel, and it has a ton of antenna elements in it. And basically what it is on the bigger one, I believe, it's six little sectors inside one panel. And where the advantage of that is that it's not, it's for tower rent, it's one antenna, so you're not going to pay six times tower rent. Put up six sectors.
And at the bottom, they have a magic little box that combines your input, and then knows how to smartly deal with the antenna array.
It's Peter Kranz out in San Francisco has got some of these. He's deploying. Puts six PMP 450s in a 90 degree space, and he's getting 256 QAM on that. At like 3 miles, I believe, in DFS spectrum.
High density, it saves tower rent.
Throwing, it seems like everyone's about throwing a ton of bits in the air at the same time, making the units as small as possible to maximize the modulations.
Yeah. Of course, Matt and them are here from Ubiquity. We got to see their Droid telephone, kind of cool little device, but I guess it goes along with their the philosophy that they're not, you know, they're not just a, you know, wireless manufacturer.
Yeah, Cisco has a similar product, but they're targeting, but obviously this is probably going to be better and cheaper to make it work how they want it to work.
Yeah, I haven't actually, laid eyes on one. I've been hounding them to try and get one, but I haven't been able to convince them just yet. But have they said anything about the back end, like the back end phone system? Are you going to be able to connect to any SIP service? Or
I haven't approached them yet at the show because they didn't have any major announcements that I'm aware of. So I was like, well, I'll get to you when I get to you. But from what I talked about on or like saw on the forum, it seems to be a mixed message. In some areas, yes, it's fully SIP compliant. You can do whatever you want with it. In other areas, to use our magic sauce, you have to use our box. But then it, back and forth, I don't know what the final answer is.
Yeah, I haven't heard one way or the other what it's supposed to look like these days.
Nor what the magic sauce actually is. They seem to make a big splash and then not really answer people's questions.
Yeah. Probably their unified controller software that they're coming out that's like a unified product for the cameras, phones, and for the APs and the switches and everything else.
Yeah, I think they just released their unified gateway, right? Their security gateway, which I guess is just the it's like the edge router, but for Unify. And the idea is you control, you know, again, eventually the idea is to control absolutely everything. So you got your edge router, you got, I guess theoretically, your phone system, all your cameras, your wireless APs, all in one nice little convenient box for the enterprise.
And Baltic got theirs in shipping. I think it was like 117 on that.
That's not bad. Because yeah, they said the specs were like 1 million packets per second, which is I think was roughly the same as the Edge Lights. That they were selling before. So it should. In my mind, I'm thinking it's just the same thing, just repackaged differently.
Let's going through the list here, another company that we had briefly mentioned earlier, Bitlamat. Justin, you know, he's had some blog posts on him. You know, he's worked with them, done some consulting for some of their clients that have bought their gear. And to me, up until the last announcement, it was not really something I was excited about. You know, it was like, you know, I'm glad there's another vendor in the space. You know, Jeff Broadwick, you know, we've been great to the industry. You know, he went to work for him. Great. I wish the best of him. But it wasn't really, it wasn't enough distinction for me.
They should have a thing on their website if you want to find it. They've got kind of a roadmap to what they're doing. One of the coolest features they're doing is they're taking under vendor CPE, and for a licensing cost, they would put their software on that CPE. So you don't, I can't remember what the marketing literature says, but it's a, well, it's not a truck roll upgrade.
Right, yeah, it's, they have a little software tool that can not only roll you to their firmware, but roll back to the original vendor's firmware. For their version 1.x firmwares, it's $20. Their 2.x firmwares, which aren't out yet, it'll be $50. 2.x is when they bring sync into the picture. They didn't have a list for it yet. Echo. They would work on upgrade pricing so that, you know, they want to make it as easy as possible for us. So therefore, they were, you know, they would work with us to, you know, buy the 1.x firmware now, and then 2.x was available, you know, pay a difference or, you know, maybe difference plus a small premium.
What vendor are they? Are they pretty much primarily targeting Ubiquiti for that stuff?
I think so. Yeah. I think Ubiquiti is the target.
Yeah, the first vendor in the lineup is Ubiquiti, because I told them, I was like, you have a 16 dB CPE now. I only deploy 25s. I need something bigger. I said, well, that's part of why we're doing this, so that until we have our own larger hardware, if you've got something that you like, you can use it.
Just like our software on it,
and
there you go.
Which begs the question, is their software worth 50 extra bucks?
Well, I mean, just to run independently, maybe not. But where I think the advantage comes in is that they're looking at this to minimize truck rolls in a migration. So if you want their new sync product, which people are going to want, you don't want to have to go out and immediately replace every CP. They're going to eventually support Ubiquiti, Microtik, and Cambium PMP series, or EPMP series, sorry. And so you roll that firmware out, and you know, you roll Ubiquiti AP back to Wi-Fi mode, and then you can replace the AP with the BitLaMAT AP.
I'm also thinking if the sync that they have, the implementation they're using, really is, if you get, I don't know, what, 40% gain from using their sync, then it does make sense to just change out the AP and then roll all those guys with the software. Because, I mean, what, $50, that's, what, one month's payment from a customer, probably on the average, about 50.
Right.
So you think you sacrifice a month to get that overall increase and maybe even bring in, what, 20, 30 more clients on existing AP? It seems like it makes sense.
One feature that's really nice with their APs is that they have incredible front-to-back performance, you know, isolation. It's like 50 dB. There's people that, just run the BitLaMAT in Wi-Fi mode, I believe, and see a tremendous increase. So, they're making it as easy as possible to migrate from whatever it is that you have now to their vision of the best thing. That should be, Sync is in the field now, should be shipping to the rest of us yet this year, next few weeks. But they will have AC in Sync come spring.
They have a nice little roadmap on their literature. Here's step one, here's step two, here's the next step. So they're telling customers what to expect.
Gotcha. Have they been hitting all those mile markers so far?
Well, I mean, it was just released like a week ago, so.
Oh, okay. I didn't know if they already had it on the roadmap and they hit it on time. I mean, it's one thing to say we're working on it, but it's another to actually hit those milestones when you say, well.
Well, they have an ex-Motorola engineer.
Yeah,
that's working on the sync and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's, they're working with Tom, I believe his name is Tom Friedman. He was, I sat in on his session yesterday, and I think I live tweeted that he's got to be by far the smartest person at the show.
I don't know, because so far with people named Tom, we haven't had a great track record, so.
He worked for Motorola, designing and implementing cellular systems in the 70s and 80s. He was with the team that invented cellular phones. And then he transitioned through the Canopy project, was just kind of an R&D playground. And then they brought some other guys on to actually productize it. He formed another company called MemoryLink, doing stuff. And it seemed to be just kind of a Me Too type thing until they had Sync. But they didn't seem to put a lot of effort in it. And then BitLaMAT teamed up with MemoryLink, and I think that's where the real victor is. He practically invented GPS Sync for anything. And another team with the Deep Atheros chips.
So the impression you get, I think it was what Greg was getting at, was the roadmap for investors or for customers setting customers' expectations accurately? Or was it kind of like, wow, look at what we've done, and like, does it look like they have a big backer, to fund all this research and development?
I think most of it is for the customer, because they realize, Ubiquiti's missing marks. Cambium is making their marks, so that's creating a buzz for, hey, you actually have a product. You're very good at releasing firmware updates and software updates and keeping it in front of people. So I think that's kind of the direction they're wanting to go is we're going to keep it in front of you, hopefully you'll want to learn more.
That I think them and Mimosa both seem to be very, if they have ulterior motives, I don't know, don't care. But what they're wanting to keep in front of the WISP updates, tell you exactly what's happening, when there's a delay, why there's a delay, so that you're not walking away with the hate to bring it up again, but with the ubiquity disappointment where it's announcement a year later hasn't shipped yet, 2 years later hasn't shipped yet.
I think people are they're realizing that hasn't been very good. So
yeah, well, and I think ubiquity and the microticks really grabbed a big chunk of the market just due to price, right? They were cheaper. From what I understand, Motorola always had a good solid product, and then when they switched off to Cambium, now with that EPMP stuff, I hear you guys talking about that all the time, they're starting to be price competitive with all of those hardware advantages, right?
Yeah, it's, like the EMP 450 right now is, in my opinion, the best hardware platform that you can deploy for a WISP if you have a pocket that's this deep. I mean, it's not cheap. You know,
I thought it was getting a lot more affordable these days.
Well, we got the EPMP line, which is the direct ubiquity competitor. Then you have the 450, which is kind of like its big richer brother.
It's like in General Motors, there's Cadillac and there's Chevy. PMP line, which is the Cadillac. It's three grand for an AP, but it is the best. Well,
what are the CPE prices like?
They're anywhere from, it's all software licensing, so it's anywhere from like $100 and some up to almost $500. So if you're on an unlimited CPE, you're paying for a license code. So if you want to push 20 megs to the client, which the AP can do without a problem, then you got to buy the high-end license.
So, I mean, it's interesting to see all these new vendors and existing vendors come out with all these new products. I think it presents the whole industry with a lot of opportunity over the next few years, especially with all the new AC stuff coming out with Mimosa, with see what BitLimit can do. If some of these guys making these products that weren't all that impressive right now, maybe they'll see themselves getting slapped and then up their ante. We also mentioned a 23-24 gigahertz product coming out as well. Backhaul.
Yeah, the whole 23-24 gigahertz line's kind of, it's kind of, I think, ran its course a little for the fact that people know about it. The last Whisper show, that was a big deal. 24 gig, I think what Trango had 24 gig. You don't even see that at the show.
So who'd you say was jumping on that? BitLimit was?
Mimosa.
Mimosa's doing it. Okay.
Yeah. In addition to, let's not forget their whole 10 gigahertz process that they're trying to push forward for backhauls as well.
Yeah.
We've talked 2.9.17 for Europe.
I don't know what their European plans are. I didn't.
Honestly, Tom, nobody cares. I don't know why you even ask.
Just lost the rest of the world there in that one moment.
No, I think usually at the WISPA they really just concentrate on the U.S. guys, right?
Pretty much. I mean, they did a graphic of people from other countries, and there was a decent, decent sampling from other countries. But yeah, I think the market's kind of focused toward the US.
I think you need to come up with a list of questions for them, Tom, so that they can just ask the questions. I think they're just not offering the information.
I didn't ask. That's the point of this whole thing is that send us questions and we'll ask them.
But actually, I might consider going if it's somewhere like Vegas.
Every single year, the October show is in Vegas.
Awesome.
I don't know that you need to go to Vegas.
I think we, yeah, I don't know who would win that one, but it would be good fun.
You'd
spend all weekend looking for me if you lost me. That's the question.
Next year, it's moving from the South Point to the Rio. We outgrew South Point. Rio is closer to the Strip, so that we'll see what happens.
That'll be a good show. And
I think so. Is MikroTik there at all, or Ubiquity? Are they represented at all?
Ubiquity's here. MikroTik's not here. I mean, there's a lot of distributors that do MikroTik that are here, but there's no representation of MikroTik. Ubiquity has a decent sized booth. I saw Matt. I haven't seen Ben or anybody.
Yeah, I've seen several of the staff, but I mean, Ben included.
So yeah. No, they got a nice little spread. Nothing too crazy. They're showing off their Rocket AC,
the phones,
the Nano Beam. They got a little Nano Beam sitting there. It's they're a diamond sponsor, so I don't think they have to go too crazy. They're in front of everybody. I mean, I think on the books, yeah. If anybody can see the book there, them and Cambium are diamond sponsors, so they they're in front of everybody.
In terms of people that I'm not sure why they're here, Huawei and ZTE, I think ZTE was the other one, the other big Chinese telecom. Nobody's gonna buy their crap here.
I don't know, man. Huawei, we see a lot of them in the carrier market, especially hanging off of people's long haul DW gear.
I see a ton
of that. If they're doing all that fiber to the home stuff, I can see them kind of maybe making something happen there.
I think their U.S. carrier. They announced a year ago that they're exiting the U.S. carrier market.
But I think that's because the U.S. government's kind of cock-blocking them every time list they can. They don't trust the Huawei gear at all. It's incredibly popular in Europe. You're seeing more of it.
It is really cheap to sell equipment when you steal the engineering behind them from other companies.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Some of their kit did look awfully like some Cisco 65.
Well, you know what's funny though is Huawei made I can't remember the brand of the routers, but they made all these routers, and then that company was bought by HP to be their new, that was bought by 3Com, and then HP bought 3Com to get those routers. So anyway, those blades and those chassis that they were making when HP bought 3Com, you could literally take one out and shove it into a 6500. Like, the pin allocations on the back were identical, the mounting screws. So it's uncanny how similar they were. Even the color scheming was the same.
The color scheme is exactly the same. It's like, there's a Cisco. Oh, no, it's a Huawei. Ah. And not only that, but they actually had the same bugs as some Cisco gear, which was kind of blatant.
Yeah, the same bugs, same exploits. In the documentation, it's the same typos. Same typo. That was obviously stolen. I mean, you might be able to say, on the code.
Cisco stole it from Huawei?
Huawei stole it from Cisco.
I'm joking.
But, what do they say? That mimicry is the most sincere form of flattery, or what is it? How's that go?
Yeah.
Yeah. The whole Chinese, culture embraces it.
Don't have intellectual property at all.
There's a car company there that ran a BMW X5 through a 3D printer. They just duplicated the damn thing, call it something else, and BMW sued them in court. And the Japanese or the Chinese judge said, "I don't know what you're talking about. It looks something like
it's." Yeah, I actually seen that episode.
And they have what are they? Don't they have like duplicate Apple stores that aren't Apples?
There are coffee shops that it's not Starbucks, but it's their same font and color. It's like they steal everything.
Yeah. You know what I thought was fascinating was they were talking about, I saw this article about counterfeit products coming out of China. You know, and it's always really expensive stuff like Rolexes and everything like that. Well, then when in the, not too long ago, however long ago that was, you know, the economy tanked, they started counterfeiting cheap stuff. So customs started intercepting counterfeit containers of toilet paper. Just like the most bizarre random thing. Because it's like they have these tons of factories and nobody's buying these high-end products, so they just counterfeit anything that people will buy.
Yeah.
But even, but sure, didn't Ubiquiti have a problem with counterfeiting there for a while? Like it wasn't obviously Ubiquiti's fault or anything, but literally they had stuff that was looking almost identical, and then they had the whole, you know, go out to the market, have you bought anything with this address or this serial number? It was it was an interesting problem to have. I suppose it was out of their own success, you know.
Yeah, yeah, and I think it was the shop that were having everything put together at. One of the engineers there just took the plans and walked across the street and started duplicating the gear.
Jeez. Yeah, once you have the bill of materials and all that stuff, you're ready to rock and roll.
At on the same topic of confused as to why they have a presence, for several years, Exceed, the satellite internet company, has been at the shows. It's all, you know, they're always pitching, you know, hook up the customers that you can't service. You know, maybe you'll migrate them later.
Yeah, I have a mailer from them that I got this past week. It was, I think it said on it something about your unserviceables.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, there's an ad in the show brochure as well,
yeah,
right now.
Yeah, that's what they sent me. The one on the left there.
But I mean, previously it was just kind of you're just an Exceed dealer. There's nothing special about you. But they've since partnered with CTI, and it is actual a genuine wholesale.
You own the customer.
Yeah, it's your customer. You bill the customer. What was it? There's their 10 gig plan or 10 meg plan, without, you know, however they measure it, is $60 a month. You pay Exceed like $27.95, and the equipment's like $275. And what their idea is that you sign up the customer. It's your customer. You bill, and then when you get 6, 7, 8 of them in a given area, then you swap them out for your WISP equipment, and then you take this, you know, Exceed equipment that you've already purchased, and now you go over.
Redeploy.
What is this stuff?
Kind of like saying, "Oh, we know it sucks, but you can move it around."
But
it is sad, isn't it?
I mean, like, you know, they have, you know, satellite has a terrible reputation, but it's entirely geographic. They've got 72, it's basically 72, I guess, what, you know, you can call them sectors on their satellite. So for example, like the one that points at Florida, there's no problem, you know. You know, I believe they're offering unlimited planes in Florida.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Because there's that sector, you know, Florida's population is in town. Once you leave town, you're in a swamp. So there's not as much rural need for it, and so there's capacity available. They did tell me, guy told me that you know, they've started shutting down zip codes in urban areas, just, you know, saying, hey, you know, you have other options, don't buy our stuff. To DirecTV and the other people that are, you know, wholesaling their service, but apparently to us, if we want to, it's available.
Speaking of rural Florida, high pass Harris at U.S. Sugar. He's a bit of a legend. Sorry he didn't make it to the moon. Anyway, sorry, moving on.
Yeah, but I don't think it will be a lot, you know, I get a lot of traction, but, and I asked him if they would make the beam loading information available, assuming they would not, and they would not. So you don't know if you're in an area that's overloaded, and till you deploy it and find out that it sucks.
I know some WISPs that have that service kind of rule John Deere dealerships. Those guys are almost always out in the middle of nowhere, and they want two lines in, right? So you hit them with your WISP, well, there's no backup option. So this might be a quote-unquote backup option. I could see that.
That's not a bad idea. You know, you put your 2011 or something in front of it, and you've got a tunnel over the satellite or something, and if the WISP goes down, it just pops over the satellite until your WISP line comes back.
Where's the satellite located? Like, is there better areas for coverage?
Up in the sky.
No, what I mean is, you know, the way that you have a lot of satellites, let's say, like in Europe, B, Sky B, with the service.
Right. I don't know where you have to point it at. You know, I mean, it's obviously south, but I don't know at, what degree you have to point it.
It's that you have to have a bigger dish in certain parts of the country and that type of stuff.
Yeah, you would.
Yeah, like, up in Alaska, you need bigger antennas for everything in Alaska. I don't have the details on that, and frankly, I'm not interested enough to find out.
Where the station, what's the typical latency?
I believe they're saying 600 milliseconds is their latency.
Oh yeah.
On a good day, yeah. It's they're all geostationary satellites, so your round trip. Just looking at the physics involved with that, you're going to be. They're doing some kung fu, but still, just the physics involved, they're 600 plus. And then you have your ground latency to worry about. Yeah. So. Their NOC, I think, is what, in Texas? At least I know that satellite provider I was dealing with, Viasat, at one point in the past, their NOC was in Texas. And every time you would have a heavy cloud cover in Texas, their NOC, they would lose their uplink to the bird. So it was interesting. So you would lose your uplink to, or you would lose your internet because there was, a thunderstorm in Texas.
That's funny, but I don't know. I ran off of satellite for probably about a year, and it was better than nothing. I didn't have any other options living out.
That's the situation I was in. I had a one-way satellite system when they first came out at my parents' house. Like, even to this day, it's kind of a funny story. I was up there for an extended period of time the last couple of weeks with a death in the family. And, they don't care if there's internet or not. My family is, they just don't care. And so I had to install internet in this house just to be there. It was just ridiculous. So I just, they had a good view to one of my resources, and I just got them going. So I don't think I can ask them to pay for it. They'd laugh at me.
Hey, Mike.
Yes, sir.
Were there a lot more billing platforms there this year?
I don't know if there's more of them, but there are a lot. I mean, every year there's a ton of them.
There's Billmax. Who else? Azotel.
Swift Fox is somebody new.
Swift Fox, Freeside.
I suspect that Ubiquiti's building one. All the questions they're asking on the forum and things they're doing.
Platypus is here.
I think they're going to build one, and I think it's dumb.
Yeah, there's at least probably 7 or 8 billing vendors here.
They should make a working air control. That's what they should do.
Yep.
Watch my presentation in about 45 minutes.
Are you streaming it live?
They'll post it to the WISPA site, I think. We're talking about. Stuff like that. Tom made it into my presentation earlier, so you were here in that.
Bigger routers, bitches.
Yeah, that was on the slide. And they even had Facebook comments. I think the one comment was, this is how I'm going to do my network troubleshooting from now on.
uh, um, There's a lot of licensed vendors here. The one that excites me most right now is Alcoma. They're a European. Looks like Tom may have dropped off or at least ran away.
He ran away.
But they're European cellular market, and it's very competitive. They actually use the whole 80 megahertz channels. Most licensed vendors, they say they do 80 megahertz. It's really only 56, so they're wasting a third of the channel.
Yeah.
Through the use of 80 megahertz and their high QAM, I forget if it's 2048 or 4096 QAM, but they're able to actually get, for all intents and purposes, a gig. It's like 900 and something odd meg, but a gig of uncompressed throughput. And when I got a quote a few months ago, it was $8,500 for radio, 3-foot dishes, all accessories, no license keys at all, delivered.
What frequency?
License, so 6, 11, 18, 23. Obviously, 6 gig, you don't have 80 megahertz channels, so you're only able to do 750 megs. They do have a 24 gig unlicensed product that does 900 and some odd meg, full duplex. And then as I was at their booth, it's not something that they talk about in their brochures, but there's just so many things that's like they thought about how to do stuff. Like most things, you plug a Cat5 in, and sometimes it falls back out. Their Cat5 interface is a punch down block, so that's never falling out. It's a nice door. They support SFPs. It's a much nicer radio than any vendors I've seen. And it's,
so what's the most compelling multi-point offering that you've seen while you've been there?
Shipping next year or 2 years? What timeline?
Any timeline. Just let's both of them. This year and within the next 24 months.
Well, let's go just for now. Shipping, there's not really anything new that's been announced that's actually shipping right now. So for me, it'd be the Cambium EPMP.
Yeah, they're a solid product. They're updating the software on a regular basis.
But assuming everyone hits their advertised targets, mash up between Bitlomat and Mimosa, with Mimosa winning the performance crown, but Bitlomat being less expensive and still a lot better than what you already have.
Yeah.
Assuming they hit the sync and they hit the AC, I feel it'll be a very price competitive high performance.
Has there been any talk from Ubiquiti at all while you guys have been there about their next generation point to multi-point offering?
They haven't done anything. But they had a bowling night just for socialness, but they've made no announcements. And because they've made no announcements, I haven't gone to ask them anything. But I will go there and,
Well, you said you dropped by and said hi to Matt Hardy, right?
Well, I've talked to Matt, but it's more social than business.
Yeah.
Been for a little bit last night. They went into the strip.
I'm going to go there. It's just on my priority list, since they didn't have anything new to talk about, I'll get there when I get there.
Right.
I am watching through changedetection.com, watching all of their FCC certifications. So when anything's updated, I get emailed and hopefully those products new, because they have FCC IDs for all the stuff. It's just, when is it going to, be in the mail?
Right. I'm curious if they'll have a, like you were saying, I've seen some, if they'll have a beam forming and mole forming, like you were talking about, offering on the next generation, because some of the projects I'm looking at are, like, some higher density stuff, and I know that they've got the 45-degree sectors now, and that's all well and good, but still, I think to take full advantage of AC, we're still going to have to get those SNRs, I mean, in ridiculous levels compared to what we're used to now.
Right, yeah. I mean, once you're using Wave 2 AC chips, which, you know, obviously they're not using them now. Once you're using Wave 2, if you're not using, multi-user MIMO, which does have some implications of using beamforming, if you're not using that, you're doing yourself a disservice. So I would expect it to come because it's in the chip, so everybody's going to be doing it. If you don't do it, you better have a damn good reason why you're not.
Right.
I also expected to see some of that beamforming in their Unify products. Because they are starting to shoot for those higher density deployment areas, and I can think of one place that could really use it a lot.
I was talking to someone about density deployments, and I was like, yeah, I know a guy that's worked with it, and it's just not quite there.
Oh, no, the stuff's in there. I don't know what you're talking about. But, yeah, the place is bristling with it.
They added Ruckus APs here to keep up with the demand. I think I heard somewhere they added 20 or 40 Ruckus APs.
Yeah, it's a total of, I think, 35 Ruckus APs. I think they added, 10, 15, 20 from last year. It's over such a large area. There's two separate areas for the exhibit hall and for the session / I can't think of the big room is.
The ballroom.
Yeah, the ballroom. Ruckus has been mentioned many times. I wanted some MDU type sessions. And, they're like, Wi-Fi, blah, blah, blah. I was like, I talked to some guys, and they said that, just use Ruckus. And they're like, if you use Ruckus, it's just going to work. There's no discussion.
I don't know. We have a building that Ruckus is deployed in, and it doesn't work. So it's just purely because of the construction of the building. It's all poured concrete and corrugated metal. So
we just need more.
Yeah, the dilemma is they respect Ruckus, and the density of Ruckus is not enough. So in that case, every room in this MDU is basically its own a Faraday cage. So the only way to approach it is with an AP in every room, at which point, since you're blocking RF in and RF out...
Well, then, then just use Unify because it's...
Exactly.
It's no longer high density deployment when nobody can see anybody else.
It's actually
it's just you have a lot of them in the geographic area, but they can't see each other anyway.
Like Wi-Fi solitary confinement.
That's pretty much what it is. But I mean, ultimately, you couldn't ask for a better environment to deploy it in, other than you have to approach it with a lot of wires.
And drills.
I'm curious, would that be a good environment to test out the leaky feeder cable in?
Yeah, might be.
Especially if you've got access to the ceiling, you could probably just dump leaky feeder cable all the way down the middle.
Can you tell people what leaky feeder cable is? Because
leaky feeder cable is, I think it was pioneered... To my understanding, for like the mining industry, so it's basically a coax cable, looks just like an RG6, and you just run it in a straight line, say down like a mine shaft, and every so often in the cable there's they call them windows or cutouts, so it's shielded, right, and then you've got the center core in there, and the shielding's actually got just little rectangles cut out at different precise size and distances to allow the radio the RF to leak out of those cables, hence the name leaky. So think of it like a water hose with a bunch of holes poked in it. You know, when you pressurize it, it just starts squirting out down the line. So the closer you are to the source, the higher the output. And as you get to the very end of the line, there's a little bit less radio waves coming out. But it's really great for environments where you don't necessarily have a ton of clients connecting, right, which sounds like that situation. But you really just need to cover a really large area. So one thing I learned with playing with leaky feeder cable is you can't put it on the ground. You have to have it at least 3 feet off the ground. You have it up there at least that high. 6 feet was ideal in my testing, and it would radiate a good 40, 50 feet easy with great NAG FETI signal. And then also you can't run it in tandem with pipe, so you can't just run it and strap it to a piece of EMT conduit because that'll ground it out. If I can remember what the technical term for it is, where it basically just eats the signal. But other than that, there's a couple of manufacturers I found that make it for airplanes as well. So whenever you're on an airplane that has Wi-Fi, they're actually doing it with a leaky feeder cable running down the fuselage in there. And so those guys, if you buy cable off of them, I think it's Gore is the name of the company that I was looking at, and it's really expensive because they use special claddings on the cable, you know, that are rated for air travel and all that stuff, but you can get the cheaper underground stuff, and you can actually get it off of Alibaba straight from China for a pretty good price. You just have to figure out how to get it from Shenzhen back to the States.
Yeah. Don't use the Ubiquiti boat.
I don't know. It couldn't hurt to stick it on there. It's going to get here eventually. But it would be great for an environment where, say, like a hotel where you have long hallways and you just access all those clients. So you put an AP in the middle, say like an outdoor, one of the outdoor unifies, and then so there are two chains. So you just run one chain down that side of the hallway, run another chain down this side of the hallway. So you basically have one channel servicing that entire floor, and then you go up one floor and you do the same thing. And you keep going up, so you've only got 3 non-overlapping channels and 2-4, but you've only got 1 AP per floor. So those channels are stacked so high that it should dissipate enough before it gets to the next channel. So in theory, it should work pretty well.
Yeah. What's the loss you see on the cable? Like, you know, how far are you able to run before there's nothing left?
I think in my testing, I went about 60 feet, okay. I think 50, 60 feet, somewhere in that neighborhood. And when you were about 20, 30 feet away from the cable at the end, like a neg 40 to neg 50 signal. So it was real, and that's on your phone, on my crappy phone that gets 10 dB less than my laptop. So it's still an adequate signal. So you got to figure you're going to go through a doorway and through some sheetrock and stuff like that to get in there. So there'll be a little bit of loss, but it should, in the end, you should end up with somewhere between neg 40, neg 50 to the client, maybe neg 55.
But before we run out of too much time, we are on somewhat of a schedule with Wilson here. Last week, Miller went to Nanog 62. What excitement can you talk about from there?
Well, I was in Baltimore, so it was a short drive up there, and I think the talks were good. They were highly technical, and a lot of them were focused on security and transport and that kind of thing. But the contacts that you can make, it's like the engineers for the carriers that you connect to go to Nanog, and you can go and you can talk to the one guy at Cogent who's been there for 15 years who knows everything about the network everywhere, and you can pick his brain. And we learned more about the networks here in Richmond in that 3-day span of time than we have in the last 15 years. I mean, it was incredible. What we learned. We talked to the lead technical engineer for Windstream, and we were having problems a while ago with them dumping us on Cogent, and we were like, hey, you know, we don't really use you for much of our outbound traffic or inbound traffic. We just use you for local traffic. And he was like, well, yeah, we ditched Cogent, and now we're sending you out XO and a few others and everything. And sure enough, we went back to the room that night and played it with the BGP prepens and everything, and we saw that their bandwidth had improved. And we wouldn't have known that. We'd have been, you know, standard operating procedure, just leaving it like it is. And then we got there and talked to the guy, and sure enough, it was now much, much improved. So I think that was pretty much.
So you got cell phone numbers, right?
Yeah, I got business cards, email addresses. Didn't get cell phone numbers. No discriminating pictures or anything like that. I mean, Baltimore. It's not Vegas, right?
I don't know. I've seen Tom in Pittsburgh. I'd hate to see him in Vegas.
Well, I mean, you saw. You saw pieces of him in New Orleans, and that was bad enough.
Yeah. So some of the most interesting talks, there was one about the Burning Man group and how they go out there every year and build out this huge network using Ubiquiti hardware and a WISP that provides the bandwidth, 40 megs up and down for them, and they got some backup license links and things. They have a provisioning server that you would just go and take a defaulted CPE and plug it in, and it would just go in there with admin and no password or whatever, and then just program the thing for you, and then you would take it back to your tent or wherever you were staying and just point it at their sector or whatever, and you would be able to get online through that. And that was pretty cool. They also did a lot of programming of the configs for everything, a lot of I think it was NCG, which is a Linux project that allows you to basically do make and build out configs for a bunch of things that you've defined in text files. And you can just, you know, do it over and over again and then, you know, program that stuff. That was pretty cool. There was a talk about BGP sec and I think it's RPKI, which is signing your prefixes.
Uh-huh.
What the state of that is and what exactly is the effect of partial deployment of that, and it wasn't too good. So basically, if everyone is not on board, it's still easy for people to hijack your prefixes or do all kinds of crazy stuff. So that was interesting. There was a guy from Siena, one of the engineers, who was talking about doing 100 gig throughput through optical transatlantic optical cables, and he had animations of the lasers at the endpoint, and you would see like four little dots, and then he would change the modulation, and you can see him real time move around, and you know, when he picked the QAM, it would be a different, you know, fit, shape and everything, and that was pretty interesting.
That's cool.
A lot of technology goes into that. You can go and watch that video if you go to nanog.org and the top, go to meetings and pick number 62 and then look at the agenda. You can watch all the videos here that we're talking about. There was a presentation from Comcast about deploying a true carrier-grade Wi-Fi experience. And while we watched it, we're like, where are they deploying this exactly? And they've got pictures of cities and things like that, and with bubbles, you know, where their coverage is. And, you know, at the end of it, some guy stands up and he's like, is this the hotspot everywhere thing that you guys are doing? And they're like, yes. So they basically did a presentation on turning everyone's
cable modem into a hotspot.
Yeah, yeah. So
we talked about that about a year ago, didn't we?
Yeah, that was the presentation, and that's how they're doing it. And they made sure to point out during the presentation, well, this is how it's segmented. This is, you know, the hotspot that's on there, and this is your traffic, and this is, you know, two GRE tunnels that go back, and it's separate. So
I can't wait for there to be a zero-day exploit hit in the wild that just compromises the entirety of that configuration.
Yeah. And there was a lot of ICANN talks and ARIN talks and things of that, like a lot of regulatory stuff, and lots of socials. Every night was a social for like 4 or 5 hours.
Weren't some of those guys the most anti-social people you've ever met?
You'd be surprised, but it was very clicky as well. A lot of the big carriers just stick around the big carriers, and we were like a small little, you know, little carrier here, you know, with our couple thousand users, and there's Comcast, and then there's Cox, and then there's Verizon, and Windstream, and Level 3, and Cogent, and XO, and Lumos, and just
did everyone. Did you see anybody, like, trying to recruit, like, trying to steal engineers from other camps? Did you see any of that?
No one approached me. I don't think so. I don't think so. They had one vendor night where they had all the vendors out, and they had I think it's the InfiniBand box or something. It's a carrier grade CDWM or whatever it is, channelized fiber that's tunable. You can change the light waves in it to whatever. It's like $300,000 or something like that. That was pretty cool to see. I think that's it. We talked about it on the phone earlier. So that was pretty cool to see.
Yeah, I have a provider around here that's running that stuff. And for the money, I just can't understand it in contrast to, like, some of the dense wave JDSU stuff. It's just like, anyway, that's neither here nor there.
Yeah, so there was a talk on multicast and how everyone needs to implement it on their networks, which is interesting. No one really agreed with the guy. That's one thing I noticed is people get up there and they troll or they just, you know, say, I totally don't agree with you, and that fact there is wrong.
Oh, wow. Like, so you really get called out.
Yeah, you get called out, and if you don't really know what you're talking about, they really call you out. So one guy did, I think it was load balancing over IPv6, and they were like, so single pass load balancing with session persistence in IPv6 networks. And the guy did his whole presentation, and then the questions started coming in, and they just tore him apart. And they were like, so is this, you know, what exactly do you use this for? And the guy's like, well, it's, you know, totally theoretical. So everyone's like, so we just sat through this and listened to this, and it's not even something that you can really do. And it's because IPv6 has encryption across the tunnels and everything, he was stripping the encryption out and being a middleman and then adding encryption back. And all kinds of stuff, and they're like, "That's, you know, security concerns there are abound," and it was just bad. There was a whole tutorial on traceroute and how to read traceroutes and make maximum troubleshooting potential with them, which was really cool. I went to see that one. That was probably one of the most practical sessions.
So you definitely recommend somebody going back and watching that one.
That one, yes. Go back and watch the Trace the Route one. It's on Tuesday. It's the first session on Tuesday, October 7th. And then, so what else was there that was good? Whole talk about cellular out-of-bound management, which, you know, WISP's been doing for a long time. And then software-defined networks, which was pretty cool.
That's pretty interesting stuff.
Yeah, and there was a peering track as well where they basically a bunch of internet exchanges got up on stage. There was probably way more than anyone expected that showed up all over the place. So, you know, MICE and MS Exchange was there, and Lynx was there, and a whole bunch of other ones, like one from Florida.
I just saw yesterday that there's a new exchange going up in Miami. Zayo, Netflix, and some others are setting it up in one of the major facilities there, and they'll have a presence in the other data centers within that building, but they're calling it the Florida Internet Exchange. So when you shorten it, FLIX, Netflix is
FLIX. Right.
Like, so you know how they came about with that.
Yeah.
I mean, I see all of these content distribution exchanges being a very good thing for our entire industry. I mean, if you look at it through the prism of a small provider like all of us, it's like, so you're telling me that I have to spend 70% of my bandwidth budget on transporting Netflix for Netflix customers, where if you could peer with them directly, you know, it's like, oh, well, that's free now. Awesome. So, or not necessarily free, but you know what I'm saying.
transport to get there, and then it's the pairing is free, and you got to pay, you know, to be a member of that exchange and all that stuff. So. Right.
Yeah. It takes a lot of work to get there, but so I see it as great for WISPs, but you have to pay for transport, so you've got to get to the internet exchange. But you can buy your DIA when you're there and do your offload. But also, I've seen people pseudo taking advantage of this around Google Fiber. So Google Fiber will cover a specific defined area, and all those periphery areas, people will come in and say, "Hey, man, we can give you the exact same thing," you know. But they just connect to those open exchange. I have to do like any marketing. All I have to do is walk up and say, you know, gig speed or fiber to the home or anything like that. So it's kind of it's funny because these big carriers, you know, put all this money into this marketing, and you can just surf right on the top of that, take advantage of it. I think it's awesome.
Right. So I'm about to have to bounce out, but I was noticing something interesting behind Greg there, and since he's internet famous now, maybe he could tell us about that.
Oh, you can actually see this thing? Oh, you can?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. So I made a viral video, which wasn't supposed to be viral. It was only supposed to be like seen by like 8 people. And so I had several hundred people tell me how crappy my dancing is, which I will totally admit to. The only problem is you didn't even give me a chance. I wasn't even attempting to dance in that. But so I made a light suit with individually controlled pixels. They're WS2812s. It's basically off a microcontroller. You hit it with one pin, and you can individually control those lights. And so I made a suit that's controlled by an NES Power Glove. Wah, wah, wah. The bend sensor's in there and does all the funky, fresh stuff.
Hey, my laptop's dying, so, guys, but I don't know if you can still hear me. But we'll see ya.
See ya. Yeah, so I got enough lights to make 2 suits for my kids, and actually 2 more Power Gloves showed up today. So I'm going to gut those and wire them up for the kids. And then this is actually a skirt for my wife. So we're gonna be dressed up for Halloween. And then also I do a lot of EDM stuff. So there's a thing called Something Wicked showing up in about a week. And so we're gonna be blowing it up.
Nice. So Greg, I thought that you're the one that wore the skirt in that family.
I wear whatever I got to wear. You just keep the peace, brother. Again. You can complain all you want about screaming kids and being married because you're not there yet.
So, Observium. You want to talk about that?
Are you getting crazy on that?
Yeah, man. We've been deploying it, and it's pretty nice. I definitely recommend paying the $250 for a full year of access to this subversion for it to get the latest features and alerting and everything, which I haven't gotten to the alerting, but most recently I just got the smoke ping integration working. So once you add all these devices in to Observium, there's a script that you can run through cron and generate your smoke ping configs directly from it. And then it'll start pinging that stuff and give you integrated graphs of it right inside of Observium. So Observium is a tool like a Cacti or MRTG or Nagios, where you can graph devices, CPU, transport, bandwidth, 95th percentile and all that stuff. It has a billing mechanism in it as well, so you can bill people for their 95th percentile usage. Has alerting system in it. It's pretty cool. It's got instant search in it too, so if you monitor a bunch of switches, you can just type in like an apartment number in it, and it'll show you all the apartments on every switch that you have all at once, and then you can just pick whichever, you know, switch you want, whichever property, whichever floor, whatever. So that's really, really cool, and also get the MAC address tables out of it, so you can sell what MAC address they have from that port. And it works with MikroTik, not completely, not fully. They don't support the MikroTik MIB, but they do everything else. So you don't get all the cool and wireless registration table graphs or anything like that. It just does ports and stuff like that. What are you laughing at, Greg?
My kids are screaming like wild Indians out here. I just, you, I guess you can't hear them.
I so hear I'm something.
Just, I'm holding
something
together. All right. Well, actually, we need to put a bow on it. For the first time ever, we're gonna end on time because Justin's actually got a presentation that he's got to run away to, and Mike's got to go and give him a good game afterwards, right on the butt. So it was great seeing you guys. Loved hearing about the new products, and I'm sure once it's all said and done, we're gonna have a lot more. Ask about those European stuffs.
Yeah.
See what they're doing over there for those guys.
Ask where the edge switches are.
Since the Q&A didn't work on the live cast for whatever reason, for those watching, comment, send to the Facebook, whatever, all of your questions as soon as you can, so that way we can get them addressed before the vendors leave.
Yeah, for sure. And ask Matt when he's going to send me some phones.
Okay. I will tell him that I will not leave the phone. But if he likes that, you might not get phones, so I don't know.
We'll see. He's a beautiful man. Tell him I said that.
I will tell him that.
All right, good deal. All right, guys. So this is Greg signing off. Justin? And Justin?
Which one?
Miller and Wilson. Pleasure having you fellas. Mike, always fun. Tom is gone MIA, not surprising. And so long to JJ, who ran out of battery. See you later, guys.
See you later.